what was coming to me as you were sharing this, I was thinking about how, I mean, for instance, like Black Elk going through a out of body experience when he was a young boy, and then having a vision, and then being essentially almost like in a schizophrenic state until he's put up on the mountain and then healed and brought back into the lodge and everything. So it makes a lot of sense that it seems like these cultures have the container to appropriately handle these things, and then and also understand them and be like, well, you know, the person has an imbalance, but we have the tools and the techniques and the compassion to bring them back into a place of balance. So
Well, in all reality, my understanding of indigenous medicine, we don't believe in sickness or illness. We just believe that you're out of balance. And our job as a medicine person is simply to find where you're out of balance or assist you in seeing where you're out of balance, and then assisting you to get back into balance. That's really what it is.
right. It's a profound simplicity, right? I mean, that you have in Western psychiatric medicine, like the level of complexity with analyzing and trying to do all these things, but just coming back to these simple premises of like plants, the fire, the el I mean, what you were sharing was coming to me also about the power of the element of water. There was something there with the water was purifying something, cleaning
Oh,
something for
yeah.
you. I mean, that every you say every time the water comes in, that's when you would get you'd get well.
I think as I look at it now, as I go back at it now, water, surfing used to be my religion. It was the in the ocean was the only place that I felt at peace. It was the only place. And so when I moved to Utah in 1973, I had been a water person from the age of 9 years old until I was about 28 years old. And I remember when I left, I lived in Isla Vista, which is next to Santa Barbara. And I remember walking down to the beach and saying, just walking with my clothes and sat down, crying. Basically, thanking the ocean for being my friend for so many years. And so now that, as you brought that up, when the water came in, it was a message to me that I'm safe.
Okay.
That's now that thought process that I just shared with you. Just came to me. That's the reason I was so open to really see where I was out of balance because of the water saying it's safe. Interesting.
Powerful.
It's interesting you brought that up because it was you that helped me to put that together because as soon as you said the water, then I realized from the time I was 9 years old, water was sacred to me. It was a own surfing and I up until I was 55 years old, I could still dive over 80 feet without tanks. I surfed and surfed at Mekaha like you have no idea. Surfing. The ocean was my sanctuary. And when I left the ocean to move to Utah, I knew I wouldn't be able to jump in that water anytime I felt it. And I sat there crying and saying, thank you for being such a good friend of mine.
Beautiful. And so then you found that peace in the teepee. What kind of unfolded from there afterwards? After you've now found what it was, like you found like actual healing is coming. What was the next, what kind of opened up from there? 'Cause I imagine it was quite powerful.
I really stepped into the medicine then. And I started to own my heritage that I had denied ever since I was 18 years old. You suggested that I was an Indian. That was almost fighting words to me.
Right.
I would not allow anybody to think or feel in my presence that I was an Indian. I started to realize how incredibly disrespectful I have been to my heritage. And I'll never forget this. Clifford Jake had a nephew. His name was Gary Tom. Gary Tom was eventually a tribal chief of the Shevets Indian Reservation. We said we would assist each other in assisting our cultures to regain more respect and honor. And we'll do whatever it takes to do that. So right then, with that commitment with Gary Tom, I put both feet into the medicine, and my dedication has been 1,000% on standing up for my culture. And I did that with my friend, Gary Tom. And the things that he accomplished is mind-boggling. He was also, because he didn't want any accolades, he was also a co-founder of Aklava Native American Church.
Right.
So that's when I really picked up the baton and started honoring my heritage. And then I realized how disrespectful I had been when I didn't realize it at the time, but when my mother shared with me that my grandmother, in her dying breath, had that one letter I sent her. I made a commitment. I would never deny who I was ever again.
You're saying you're disrespectful, but what I feel is like, you know, people from the outside are imposing this conditioning upon, you know, you as a child at 3 years old, that there's something wrong because of that kind of ethnicity.
Even so, my father, or the man that raised me, as beautiful and as wonderful as he was as a father, he downgraded Native American people like they were just disgusting. I mean, they're disgusting. Nothing but drunkards, nothing but irresponsible people. I mean, that was drilled into me. And then the DNA fear that was instilled in me. And then the time when I was 3 years old, actually being brutalized for being an Indian. I mean, it had significant traumatic impact into my every cell of my being.
Of course, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And so you're getting into how kind of you guys started to form the ONAC, coming from like this deep pact about like, okay, we're going to honor our heritage and connect to that, and we're going to bring that forth because, you know, that's something that has been deprived from all kinds of forces. And
Gary's and I's major thing.
No, okay,
it became part of it.
Okay.
But our major thing, because of my consulting and things, I would go to other tribes and work with the youth, teaching the sweat lodge and sacred prayer pipe ceremony. I went to the Wallapai people, the Paiutes, all over the country, and tribal chiefs. And something that happened is that Clifford Jake, I went to him, and after that fourth meeting with him, and about 2 or 3 months later, when it was so weird, I would take the lithium, and 1800 milligrams was making me bleh. So I dropped it down to 1500, and 1500 made me bleh. I dropped it down to 1200 made me bleh. And so I dropped it down to 900. That was making me. I dropped it down to 600, and then finally I went to 300, and that was making me droggy. So I stopped taking it. After I stopped taking it, I went to Clifford and I said, "Man, you cured me of bipolar manic depressant." And he just he said, "No big deal, James, you know." And I said, "Man, we've got this is one of the major illnesses." That's when I was still in that game, illnesses and throughout the whole United States. We got to take this to the white man. And he says, "No, if I took it to the white man, my brothers in the medicine would kill me, James. I hate those people." He basically said to me, "James, you know I work with white people, but I can't make it a policy because my brothers will kill me. But I will train you, James, to take the medicine to the white people. But if I do, and you do, two things are going to happen to you." I said, "What do you mean?" "Yeah, two things are going to happen to you. A white man's going to throw you in his jails, and the Indians are going to try to kill you." So I went to Clifford about a month or two later, and I'm being tantalized because of Gary and a fellow by the name Gary Tom, who is a Paiute, and Will Nakima, who is a Hopi. And both those two guys shared with me what they went through in Indian schools in Utah. We're not going to get into that. But anyway, Will Nakima at that time was the director of Indian Affairs for the state of Utah. Gary at that time was the head of the education for the Paiute Nation. In other words, he was in charge of distributing funds for the education for the Paiutes. Mm-hmm. I went to Clifford and I said, "Clifford, do I need a card to prove I'm a Native American church member?" He looked at me with a kind of a disgusted look. And he says, you wait here, you stay here. I'll be right back." He goes into his bedroom, comes walking back out, says, "Give me your hand." I put my hand out, puts a peyote button in, and he says, "Get the frick out of here, that's all you need." Gary Tom came to me and asked me, or told me, that the spiritual leaders, the indigenous spiritual leaders, sued the state and won a suit against the state of Utah the Department of Corrections because the Department of Corrections refused to allow the sweat lodges into the prison system. Now, unbeknownst to most people, they don't know what I'm going to tell you. But some of the tribal governments are beholden to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs from 1918 have been placed into the position of denying the Native American Church of its civil liberties since 1918. Mm-hmm. And the reason, this is a little history I'm giving you, which very few people know, that in 1918, a law sponsored the writing of a law, the oil industry, Rockefeller, Randolph Hearst, the paper magnate out of San Francisco, had owned almost all the newspapers and acquired a lot of forestry up in Canada, or not Canada, northwestern United States. Du Bois Chemical, the clothing industry, the pharmaceutical industry, formulated a law in 1918, and the churches, especially churches like the Catholic Church with its Pope, or Mormon Church with its president, or whatever, who can tell people that you have to please me in order to get ushered into heaven, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
And I'm not negating these people. I'm just saying these were the people. These are facts.
Right.
These financial people are making billions of dollars on a daily basis at the suppression of the Native American culture. So they foresaw this. And so they formulated a law to outlaw the entire American Native culture in 1918. It was called the Peyote Law. And the reason they called it the Peyote Law is because peyote was the premier commodity that was distributed on the ancient, before recorded history, on the trails, trading trails from Peru all the way up to Alaska. Because peyote was so safe, so easy to distribute, and so powerful. It was used on all the ceremonies. So by outlawing peyote, they would be outlawing the entire American Native cultural ceremonies, where the ceremonies, their stories, and their singing keeps their traditions alive.
Right.
So they formulated this law to outlaw the entire American Native culture, called the Peyote Law. That law actually passed the House of Representatives. My grandfather, who is a Smithsonian Institute, and look him up sometime, anything to do with Indians, James Mooney, it's there, a Smithsonian Institute ethnologist. And according to the federal government, my grandfather, great-grandfather, James Mooney, impregnated one of the daughters or an offspring of Osceola when he was only 14 or 16 years old, but not old enough to take care of the child. So his brother or relative, Mooney, raised my grandfather. James Mooney was not only, but that's one of the reasons that he was so dedicated to the Indians and wanting to know, because his first love was an Indian, And you know, who knows? I still can hardly believe all this stuff. I mean, it is so weird to me how these things all come together. I mean, you got to know, and I was saying to my wife just the other day, man, we got to know, we're not in control of nothing. The only thing we can have a choice of is, do we want to jump into the river? And that's it. Because the river's going to take us wherever it wants to.
Right.
And that's it, because I cannot rationally think how all of these parts came together. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he argued in front of Congress, and the Senate took his argument and killed the bill. He went to the Indians, because they can't read or write. They don't know what the frick is going on. And he says, the only way we can save your culture from being outlawed, because we won this battle, but there is so much at stake for all of these entities that designed that law. They're going to come at you again. And the only way that we can save you, your culture in the long run, from being outlawed, is by incorporating you as a Native American church. Incorporate your culture as a Native American church. And then over time, you'll be able to survive under the First Amendment. So he wrote the bylaws and incorporated the first Native American church. After he did that, he went back to them again. And he says, well, we've saved your culture in the long run, from being outlawed. But because of what is so at stake, these special interests that control the Bureau of Indian Affairs, these special interests are going to brainwash the entire American Native culture that the only way you can participate in your church is if you're a federally recognized Indian residing on a federally recognized reservation where the Bureau of Indian Affairs can keep a lid on your abilities to experience the full ramifications of your constitutional rights. Uh-huh. That bullshit, I mean, that's like saying to a Roman Catholic that in order to practice your Roman Catholic religion, you have got to have been born in Rome.
Right, right.
They pulled that off until 2005, when my wife and I stood in front of the Utah Supreme Court with Oklahoma Native, because they indicted Oklahoma Native American Church, trying to make it a fraudulent religious movement. And you know what happened from that. But my grandfather, what a visionary. He said, I don't know how long it's going to take. And who could guess it would be his great grandson that stood up in front of a Supreme Court that fulfilled his vision.
Yeah, this synchronicity of it is profound.
Like I said, all we do is jump in the river, man.
Right, right.
And we flow with it. So, preceding that 2005 hearing, AIM is one incredibly valiant group of people that have been so degraded by our government, it's evil. Let me tell you what happened. This idea of wanting to kill off the American Native culture is still here. We're still experiencing. Is it to any degree that it used to be? Absolutely not. But we're at the tail end of it being over with, but it's still going on to a limited degree. And one of the major perpetrators of this is an organization called NARF, Native American Rights Fund.
I know nothing of them, never heard of them before.
Okay. You know about the Bureau of Indian Affairs, though?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. In the 1973 standoff, Wounded Knee standoff, the reason AIM was there that got apart or got themselves into the Lakota Sioux or into Pine Ridge or that home, Pine Ridge, Porcupine, and Rosebud Reservations. They're all together. And Wounded Knee is actually on Porcupine. Anyway, this idea of killing Native American indigenous people went on until December the 29th, 1890.
That's Wounded Knee, yeah.
Okay, now this, what I'm going to share with you, not many people know what I'm going to tell. Everybody knows about the people being massacred. A few people know that those people that were massacred left the Indian reservation prior to the massacre because they were being poisoned and they knew it. So they wanted to get away from it. So they're 100 or so miles away and the 7th Cavalry catches up to them, which is a bunch of freaking cowards. And they're not going to fight these because there's a bounty on these people's heads. And they say, we're going to protect you to make sure nobody harms you because you're off your Indian reservation. We will protect you and guide you back if you go with us. Because they don't want to fight the Indians. They would have kicked their ass. The soldiers couldn't hold a candle light to the Native American braves. Mm-hmm. So they took these people's word for it and were ushered back to Wounded Knee Valley, where the military had these Hoskin guns placed on the cliffs surrounding them. Now, what I'm going to tell you, even more so, very few people know what I'm going to tell you. Just before, a week or so before the Wounded Knee Massacre happened, the tribal goons, police, at the direction of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, or the director, or who in the hell, I forgot the guy's name, killed Sitting Bull. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. Prior to that, Sitting Bull was part of the Buffalo Bill Cody Circus, which traveled up and down the East Coast of the United States. Buffalo Bill Cody had two acts that were just blew everybody away. One was Annie Oakley. The other one was Sitting Bull. So all the citizenship of Washington, D.C., everybody just adores him and think he's just one of these most magnificent human beings on the face of this planet. Word gets back to Washington, D.C. that Sitting Bull is murdered along with all of these children and women and elders. That woke up the consciousness of the citizenship of the United States. That day, December the 29th, 1890, is the last government sanctioned murdering of Native American people. Mm-hmm. It was no longer accepted. So the Native American spiritual leaders started to do their ceremonies on Indian reservations, and now they aren't murdered because they will not be accepted anymore. But now they're thrown into prison. And they say, well, you know, if we go off of Indian reservations, they won't kill us now. So they started doing their ceremonies off of Indian reservations. And all the supporters of the peyote law went to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and says, you got to stop these Indians from doing their ceremonies. Bureau of Indian Affairs says, no can do. And it's out of my jurisdiction. So that's the reason they formulated this law to outlaw the American Native culture called the peyote law. So in 1973, up to 1973, the Bureau of Indian Affairs were doing a fantastic job and even getting their Indians, the goons, to start killing off the medicine people of the Lakota Sioux people. More murders, unsolved murders, were going on per capita on the Pine Ridge, Porcupine, and Rosebud reservations than anywhere else in the United States of America. AIM discovers this, and so they send in Vietnam vets who made up most of AIM to protect the elders from being murdered. So then you have Indians camping out of their most sacred place, and the goons call in the FBI to run the people off of their own freaking land. I tell you, I think about this, I go freaking berserk.
I mean, the whole thing is a story of genocide.
That's right.
What the Nazis did to the Jewish people is what the American government did to the Native people here. It's not
really. Hitler got his ideas from American government,
right,
on what to do with the Jews. That's where he got it. It's in his book, for God's sakes. Well, anyway, so here's the valiant people, AIM, coming in trying to protect the elders and the culture. And they are looked upon as the evil people. And I can't tell you why I know. You have Peltier sitting in prison, and he didn't even do the freaking killing. I just get so pissed when I think of this stuff. Anyway, so this Wounded Knee standoff, where an Indian was shot, and Richard Swallow, he who holds the foundation, who verified his uncle's blessing of me to take the medicine to the white men. He also, when his uncle died, he also asked me if he could bless me and Akleva to continue on with the blessing that his uncle did, because the influences that have been influencing the Bureau of Indian Affairs to terminate the Indian reservations is trying to get everybody that was at that blessing that was held for me to deny that it even happened. And I'm here, he told me, I'm here to say my uncle knew what he was doing, and I want to verify that blessing. So he actually blessed me again to take the medicine people to the white man, and that my jurisdiction to do so will last as long as the rivers flow and the grasses grow. So Akla, the Native American church, has been blessed by no less than half a dozen indigenous people from the High Sierra Madre mountain range of Mexico to most of the tribes in America. Hmm. Well, anyway, in 1973, this woke up some really important people. And one was Marlon Brando. And another one was Robert Redford. Marlon Brando refused to receive his Academy Award because of the atrocities being perpetrated upon the Native American people at the Wounded Knee standoff. So when this happened, and Robert Redford made a documentary proving and showing that Peltier had nothing to do with that damn thing of murdering, these special interests that support the illegal activities of the Bureau of Indian Affairs said, this is getting out of hand. We need a law firm off of Indian reservations so we can continue to squash the abilities of the Native American church in receiving its civil liberties. And that's when NARF.
Some of the specific struggles, like, you know, being in this position where you're talking about,
and I could tell you a lot more about NARF
mitigating that between, okay, like, obviously white culture needs the medicine, but then the political system of the white culture is super tyrannical and opposed to it, and then you have the Indian culture that doesn't want the medicine to be shared. But then you do have people at the same time, such as Gary Tom and yourself and other people that are from that culture that recognize it needs to be shared. How do you walk between those two worlds where it's almost like both sides are attacking you for the same thing?
Well, that's a really, that's a fun question.
Uh-huh.
And since we don't have a time limit on it, I told you what Clifford Jake told me if I took this medicine to the white man.
Right.
What did he say?
He said that the white man will imprison you and the Indians will want to kill you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Linda and first our church were arrested, which was totally illegal and was actually fun for me because I knew how illegal. I mean, as a cop, I know what the warrant right. was invalid. The warrant was named after James Mooney. The part of 5 acres that we bought with $500,000 that was contributed to me by a very wealthy man that he felt that I helped save his business and saved his wife's life, which I had nothing to do with it. I just was there. But anyway, he contributed $500,000 and we bought this property in Benjamin. And I primarily wanted to go to Benjamin because I knew the corruption of the Utah County attorney. I mean, his name is Bryson, Kay Bryson. And I was warned by a woman that was in relationships to one of the Supreme Court justices that this Kay Bryson in Utah County is the most corrupt attorney that this Utah Supreme Court has to deal with and support in some ways. Well, as soon as I found that out, I decided I want to go to Utah County. And so when they wrote the, you ever hear the law called Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000.
I don't think I have.
I had a little bit to do with that, to be frank with you. And that's what is actually protects all the religion. Anyway, I started playing the drum. And as soon as he started singing, 500 Indians stopped everything they were doing. I mean, this man sang peyote songs like I have never heard before or since.
I can only imagine opera singer.
Oh,
it's got to be incredible.
It was unbelievable. Robert, and he's just a beautiful man too. But anyway, he was just, it was a showstopper. It was just unbelievable. Well, anyway, after we finished playing and stuff, and he thanks me and stuff like that. And he says, you know, I sent a bunch of my peyote that I gathered on the hunt to my home in Taos. I said, holy shit, Bob, that can get you busted. He says, no, this is my religion. Sure enough, when he got back to Taos, the FBI was there and busted him. Okay. But he won. And trying to prosecute him because of him not being an Indian and sponsored by NARF. Well, anyway, New Mexico federal court found him not guilty. They appealed it to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and the ruling there was so condemning of the federal government trying to legislate religion by racial discrimination and political. You had to belong to a political or a country or something, or a sovereign nation. Look it up. Look up the Boyle versus United States and read the ruling. It's unbelievable. Well, NARF and all of their bogus attorneys wrote an amicus brief saying that the Boyle case was a poor ruling, and that James Mooney and Oklahoma Native American Church is totally and completely illegal. The Utah Supreme Court wouldn't even accept it. It was so full of bullshit. Anyway, going back a little bit, Gary and Will got me to open up the sweat lodge ceremonies inside the prison systems. And Will went to Gary, because Gary knew me, and that we were friends. And Gary asked me if I would start doing the ceremonies, sweat lodge ceremonies, for the prison systems. I basically responded because I'm undercover and I put some of those guys in there.
Right.
And I didn't want to go in. And he said, you got to, James. I said, why? Why don't you get a Paiute or a Shoshone or a Ute to do sweat lodges? He says, nobody can qualify, James, but you. But what he was really saying is that when the state of Utah lost that civil action, the Department of Corrections went to the tribes trying to get them to submit a sweat lodge person to the court, the Department of Corrections. And of course they're not going to, because if they're seen showing any kind of favoritism on supporting the indigenous American native culture, the Bureau of Indian Affairs will stop defunding them. So because I'm not controlled by any tribe, Gary knew that. And so he got me to go in and start the ceremonies.
And were the prisoners responsive to it?
Oh my God.
I imagine they would be like enthralled by that.
Oh, they were absolutely.
Yeah.
I was an honored person. Like you have no idea.
Sure.
I was safer. And this is the honest and good truth. I was safer in the midst of the members of the sweat lodge circles than I was with the law enforcement.
Yeah, that's not surprising in a lot of ways. I can see that.
Well, let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you. My first day when I took, first, I spent 3 years just volunteering my time. Then they wanted me to be hired as a, the same thing with peyote. That's the reason they went after Adam. But yeah. I mean, they're struggling. It's like the last whimperings of a dying varmint is what I'm out of. It's just quivering. And none of that shit's going to happen. Okay. Here's the thing. This is a reason for Aquaba. This is what you ought to be more concerned about. And I'm speaking as an elder because I'm out of the game. All that stuff means nothing. Turn to jail. In other words, out of every 1,000 people that are released from jail, within 3 years, 900 of them will be back in jail. So my job was to drop recidivism, which I did. In a matter of a year and a half with people that worked with me, I dropped recidivism from 90% to less than 30%. That's a fact. And that's also a proven thing with my prosecuting attorneys. And you know what kind of reward I got for that? Fired with Aquaba Native American Church on a variety of elements. Get this, Aquaba Native American Church is the only Native American. My first day at work as an officer. No, first day at work as being the director of the Last Shot program. I had to get my secretary in my office and get all set up and everything. So I was late for lunch. So I showed up at the commissary and there's only three people besides myself in the whole commissary. There's three prison guards or employees sitting behind me. And I'm eating my meal by myself. This is what I hear. This is my first day. You know, my granddaddy used to brag to us kids that he used to go out and kill Indians like we go out and kill jackrabbits today. Welcome to your first day of employment. I was safer with those people in the circles than I was with the officers. Now I've become employee of the system. And this is after 3 years of volunteering. I'm called into visitors room. This Indian wants me to meet his mother. So I go in and I see this fellow that I believe he is Navajo. And his mother is a beautiful Indian woman. And she happens to be the secretary of the North American Native American Church of Salt Lake. And she says, "You're peyote, aren't you, James?" I says, "Yeah." And he says, "Are you a member of the Native American Church?" Well, I said, "I'm peyote, and Clifford gave me a peyote button and said, that's all I need." So, "Well, how would you like to be part of the North American Native American Church and get a card?" I said, "Yeah, I guess so, you know." says, do you have a tribal card? I said, yeah. Can I get a copy of it? I said, sure. So I Xeroxed the copy and gave it to her. 2 months later, or a month or so later, I'm calling the visitor's room again, but they'll never be able to commercialize our sacraments.
Right. So in terms of Akalua never becoming corporatized, like that part, that's obvious to me. I mean, there's no question in my mind about that. What I'm thinking more is just like, as other groups of people, like within and of themselves, separate from Akalua, start to operate more in the public sphere with medicine, how are they going to become, like, I'm just curious what you think about as you observe that happening, where all of a sudden, like, the mainstream culture's view is that, you know, everyone should take mushrooms, but it's done in a way that's completely devoid of like what Akalua is utilizing it as a sacrament.
I told you about when we left the time when I was talking about when our church was raided, right?
Yeah.
And I said that the warrant was illegal because it was named for James Mooney. Residence. And I told the arresting or the officer that was in charge of raid, I said, this is an illegal warrant, because I know about warrants, right? And he said, what do you mean? This is made out to James Mooney residence. This is a church. Look at your documents at the county, where they keep the documents and who owns what and stuff. Uh-huh. It's the Akalua Native American Church. You're at a church. And the guy said, oh my God. He stops the raid, calls back Bryson, this crooked attorney. He says, I know it. Don't worry about it. So they continues the raid. I said, I mean, this is so humorous. It's incredible. Anyway, they're raiding and going through the house and doing the whole SWAT team stuff. And I'm sitting there and kind of laughing. And Robinson, that was the officer, said, what are you laughing about? I said, you guys have no idea what kind of laws you are breaking right now. He said, what are you talking about? I said, just a month ago, the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act was just signed into law by Clinton. You are a violation of federal law. He stops again, calls Bryson up again. He said, go ahead. I'm sitting there and I just said, oh, do I got this guy by the short hairs. Yeah. You get that? In order for you to step on the property of a religious or a church, you have to prove to a judge before he will give you a warrant that they meet a government compelling interest standard. My whole life is dedicated on expanding the Native American culture.
Right.
That's my game up to then. Now it's just pleasing my wife. Because she makes everything beautiful for me. And so I happened to go down to, after we were arrested, which was about a month later, and I go down and I am really pissed. And I go to Clifford. I said, Clifford, I'm really angry. I said, Linda and I got arrested. Clifford starts laughing. I'm saying, what are you laughing for? We're arrested. And he starts laughing more and more. And he says, James, I told you this would happen if you took the medicine to the white man.
Right. He called it.
I mean, I'm laughing now, but I'm not in a laughing mood now. I mean, they arrested my wife. My God, for me, arrested me, I wouldn't have minded at all, but they arrested my wife. And that really got to me. Sure. Well, anyway, then I wanted to join in on my anger and all my stuff, you know. And I said, Clifford, they also took 15,000 peyote buttons, our sacred medicine. He starts laughing even more so. I said, what are you, for God's sakes, laughing at? They're taking our medicine. And then he, laughing, in between his laughter, he said to me, he says, James, did that medicine clean you up? And I said, yeah. Well, now it's going to clean up the state of Utah.
That's good.
I mean, this is, I'm laughing now, but then I wasn't, okay?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's funny in retrospect. At the moment, it's like kind of terrifying.
Well, then I really get pissed off because he's not joining in me with at all. And what I'm going to tell you now is going to be really important to you. I said, Clifford, and I'm pissed because I'm not getting any sympathy whatsoever. I said, Clifford, this is not fun and games, man. I do not have the blankety blank money to take on the state of Utah. And then he gets serious. And he gets up to me in my face. He looks up at me and he said, James, excuse my term. You don't need their fucking money. You've got our prayers. Whoa. We won the Utah Supreme Court ruling, unanimous decision. And we did not, Linda and I did not put out one penny for it. Hmm. So then NARF and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, after we won the unanimous decision, lied to the federal government in a grand jury stating with a false or a perjured document from my tribal brother, Lone Buck Buford. He was interviewed back in Florida when he was living in Florida by the DEA. And they falsified his testimony to those people. They falsified a document that they submitted to a federal grand jury so it would indict Linda and I.
Wow.
True story. When Lone Buck discovered it and read the grand jury document, he went berserk. And he presented to my attorneys that the truthfulness of what was really said and where they lied. That's all part of the federal records that they had gathered. So Linda and I are arrested. On Fed charges now, with indictments that could put both of us, with the intent of putting both of us in prison for the rest of our lives. Well, when I find out who my attorneys are, which is the Utah Federal Defender's Office, I asked Steve Kilpak, ended up becoming a good friend of mine, who was the director of that department, which is about 50 attorneys and et cetera. I went to Steve and I said, Steve, Can you give me a list of every one of your employees, everyone that's in your office? He said, well, yeah, sure, James. So I got this list. And I took this list with Linda's pipe and my pipe and took 3 days to hike to the top of a mountain called Mount Nebo. No, 2 days and a night. And I set up a prayer ceremony to pray for my attorneys, following the teaching that Clifford Jake taught me. And you know what happened? All those indictments were dismissed for a grand jury, and I did not put one dime into that. So my only concern about what your concern is only one thing, is that is Oklahoma prepared enough and willing to express itself so that people know throughout the world that they can truly get spiritual, physical, emotional healing from bona fide medicine people that are truly there to just assist you and not make freaking money? We're already known by the United States government that we are that organization.
Right. People are going to do what they do with medicine, with plants, yeah, with everything gets commercialized. I was just, you know.
Yeah, they can do it. But the thing is, it's going to make it very hard to commercialize the actual distribution of the sacraments, because Oklahoma doesn't give a hoot about paying taxes on their sacraments. They do not have any lawyers. We don't have stock, people that own stock that have to we don't have any of those things. We don't have to have accountants, lawyers.
It's a church. Anything. Yeah.
We don't have any fixed overhead that all these profit people need to deal with. And so they're not going to be enough money into the sacraments that these people need to support some profit-making organization. The biggest challenge that Oklahoma needs to meet is to maintain the principles in which they have become a branch or a medicine person, and that people are made aware that help is here.
Right.
Assistance is here. That's legitimate. And if other people that are legitimate that aren't part of Oklahoma Native American Church, it'll be known, because one of the major principles that Oklahoma stands for is, as the Tarahumaras and the Wecholis taught me, every breath you take, James, is a prayer. Everything you put into your mouth is a sacrament. Every person you meet is a brother or sister. Every living being and or dormant being is simply your relationship.